morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Bunganyi in Washington. Today is Thursday, January the 27th, and here are some of the stories we're covering for you this morning. Mali's military rulers clash with the international community over when to hold elections and how to conduct the fight against Islamist militants. The United Nations says that 128 million children worldwide are losing out on education because of COVID-19.
Worldwide, there are 34 million displaced children and youth. Their number will continue to grow as a result of the global climate crisis, and girls are particularly at risk.
Cyclone Ana kills at least 34 people in Madagascar, 2 in Mozambique, and 4 in Malawi.
For now, we are still getting some support from the councils, but the people, they are on the higher side. Chikwawa alone has over 10,000 households displaced.
We have those stories and more coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. And for our top story, Mali's military rulers are clashing with the international community over when to hold elections and how to conduct the fight against Islamist militants. Former colonial power France has been drawing down its troops in Mali, and European governments are considering pulling forces from a UN peacekeeping mission over concerns about Russian mercenaries. Annie Reisenberg speaks to analysts on how the tensions could affect Mali's security in this report from Bamako.
Since being sanctioned by the West Africa bloc ECOWAS for failure to organize elections, Mali's military rulers have taken a hard stance against countries, including France, that backed the sanctions. France has led the multi-nation military intervention in Mali since 2013, when forces arrived to take back the north from Islamist control. This week, Mali ordered a recently arrived Danish contingent of the European Takuba Task Force to withdraw immediately from Malian territory. The government also accused France of breaching Malian airspace by flying a military plane from Gao in northern Mali to neighboring Ivory Coast without notifying Malian authorities. Mali has acknowledged a degree of cooperation with official Russian trainers, but denies accusations that they are cooperating with the Wagner Group, a military contracting agency widely believed to have links to the Russian government. Ornella Moderan is head of the Sahel program at the Institute for Security Studies in Bamako. Speaking via a messaging app, she says that though accusations of human rights abuses against Wagner are concerning, Malians have also seen abuses from other military forces, including France, notably with a drone strike on a wedding in the town of Bounty last year that the UN says killed 19 civilians. She says the extensive Western intervention up until now has had a limited effect. All of this has not stabilized or improved the situation, she says. On the contrary, we have noticed in the last year a worsening of the security context. She says, we have more and more violent incidents, always with a lot of victims. It's in this context, she adds, that we must put the will of the Malian transitional authorities to try something else, to see if this something else can work. Ali Tunkara, director of the Center for Security and Strategic Studies in the Sahel, a Bamako-based think tank, says that without the years of military intervention, the current situation could be even worse. He says a Russian intervention may help in terms of military strength on the ground, but that this will have limited effect on long-term security. He says, I can't see the Russian Federation giving millions for projects that will reduce community tensions, notably how to bring back all of these young people who have joined these radical violent groups, to resume social life, how to restart the economy that has been slowed down by insecurity. Regarding these issues, he says, after these battles against radical groups, the Malian state will be stuck. Ali Untine, an independent UN expert on human rights in Mali, spoke via a messaging application from Dakar, also emphasizing the need for non-military solutions. Now, he says, we must reflect. After years of military intervention, if in reality the only way to intervene or to respond to the security problem in Mali is with the army, I think from this point of view, really the answer is no. Maybe we have to find other means, political means, in order to get out of this Malian crisis. Teen says it's essential that a solution to the insecurity in Mali involves young people and women especially, and focuses on development, not just more weapons and military strength. Annie Reisenberg for VOA News, Bamako, Mali.
Cyclone Ana has killed at least 34 people in Madagascar, 2 in Mozambique, and 4 in Malawi, where thousands were left homeless. Malawi, which also lost power for 2 days, has deployed search and rescue teams to help people feared trapped in flood-hit areas. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Emile Matei was sleeping at her home in the Jigawa district of southern Malawi, where the floodwaters from Cyclone Anna arrived. A single mother of one child, Matei recounts her narrow escape. She says it was around 11 p.m. I was awakened by the flooding waters from the nearby river, which surrounded my house. That night, I ran with my child to the higher ground, leaving all my property soaked in the water. Matei is among thousands of people in southern Malawi who have been made homeless by heavy rain and floods caused by Anna, which hit Malawi Sunday. The flooding has caused many houses to collapse, forcing occupants to seek refuge in churches and schools. Matei says in her area, flood victims are sleeping on bare ground, saying someone needs to provide them with tents and other necessities. She says we have nowhere to sleep. Even the churches and the schools here are in the water. What we need most is food and clothes because all our property has been washed away. Chipiriro Kamula is a spokesperson for the Department of Disaster and Management Affairs in Malawi. He says the department is still receiving assessment reports from the districts. Kamula could not specify the total number of people affected.
For now, we are still getting some reports from the castles, but the figures, they are on the higher side. Chikwawa alone has over 10,000 households displaced, and Mwanza has over 4,000 people affected.
4 people were confirmed killed as of Wednesday. Kamura says rescue efforts are underway to help others trapped in flood-hit areas.
As of yesterday, we deployed a search and rescue team comprising the Malawi Defense Force, the Malawi Police Service, Marine Department, to ensure that they rescue people feared to be trapped in Mulanje, Zomba, Chikwawa, and in Sanje.
The Department of Meteorological Services says Cyclone Anna has left the country, but warned that heavy rains would continue in some parts of southern Malawi. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
A United Nations agency reports that 128 million children are losing out on education because of COVID-19, up from 75 million in pre-pandemic days. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Since it was launched as a UN Global Fund 5 years ago, Education Cannot Wait has provided a quality education for 4.5 million children trapped in more than 30 of the world's worst humanitarian crises. Fund officials say they now will be able to help an additional 2.5 million children and youth, thanks to a generous contribution from the German government of more than $228 million. The money, they say, will allow millions of young people caught up in armed conflict, forced displacement, climate-induced emergencies, and other disasters to get an education. Germany's ambassador to the UN in Geneva, Katharina Stasch, says COVID-19 has threatened gains made in all areas, including education. She says many children cannot and do not return to school even when they reopen. She says this is unacceptable, as education is key to tackling all the challenges of our time.
Worldwide, there are 34 million displaced children and youth. Their number will continue to grow as a result of the global climate crisis, and girls are particularly at risk. We have a shared responsibility not to lose this generation. We must not leave anybody behind.
The director of Education Cannot Wait, Yasmin Sharif, says her agency provides children with a full package of curriculum, learning, protection, school feeding, and psychosocial services. Everything that is necessary to achieve a good standard of education.
Which is absolutely critical if we are to achieve any of the other sustainable development goals or human rights. unless the generation of children and youth in countries like Burkina Faso, Chad, Syria, Afghanistan, Central African Republic, Rohingyas, receive a 12-year education, we will achieve very little elsewhere in the goals that we have set for ourselves.
Sharif acknowledges Education Cannot Wait operates in challenging environments that are in a constant state of flux. She says the program can function despite the many crises and conflicts around the world because of its status as a United Nations fund. As such, she says the agency has systems and security in place that provide protection. The structure, she says, also enables agency staff to have contact with de facto governments and militia groups they otherwise would not enjoy. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and the artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week. Right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Daybreak Africa continues. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. And let's go to East Africa in Uganda, where the lawyer for award-winning Ugandan author Kakwenza Rukirabasaija says that his client was dumped by gunmen overnight outside his home, hours after he was rearrested by plainclothes security officers in contravention of a court order for his release.
Court made a decision that he should be released on bail after paying a sum of 500,000 shillings. After complying with the conditions, we went to pick him from Chitalia prisons, but he was whisked away by armed forces, took him to unknown places, but later on he was abandoned in the wee hours of the night at his home in Yiganga.
That is Mr. Luyimbazi Nalukola, the lawyer for Kakwenza Rukirabasaija. Rukirabasaija is a satirical novelist who has written books critical of Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni, was held incommunicado since December 2021 when security agents took him from his house. He was produced in court weeks later after lawyers filed a writ of habeas corpus to the High Court. Nalukola says that his client appeared frail and had signs of torture.
Our client is in great pain. The pain came as a result of torture, which was occasioned on him by men and women in security forces.
Vasaja, who won the Pen Pinter Prize International Writer of Courage Award last year, was arrested on charges of offending President Museveni and his son on Twitter. He's scheduled to appear in court again next week.
During the last hearing, the court directed the prosecution to comply with the pre-trial disclosure by Friday, and the hearing of the case shall commence on Tuesday next week.
That was Mr. Luyimbazi Nalukola, the lawyer for Ugandan writer Kakwenza Rukirabasaija. And still in Uganda, days after Kampala authorities banned vendors from conducting their businesses on the street, the government has gone further to stop hawkers from plying their trade from village to village. Authorities say that movement by hawkers is a cause of insecurity. Reporter Mugume Davis Rwakarinji has more from Kampala, Uganda.
24-year-old Amiri Ngobi came to Kampala from Iganga in eastern Uganda 3 years ago after completing ordinary level education. He says he has been saving with hopes he would get enough money to return back to school and study to become a lawyer. He walks some 30 kilometers or so daily, peddling home utensils such as basins, cups, plates, and says the business has just been fine. He says he makes some 20,000 Uganda shillings of profit daily, or about $6.
This man is helping my parents at home. Even it's helping me in renting, feeding, even closings.
Ngobi would now have to look for another alternative means of earning after the government banned hawking in the country. Jim Muhezi, Uganda Security Minister, last week issued an order banning hawking, saying it causes insecurity. Ngobi says he won't heed Minister Muhezi's notice.
When you stay here, you get some money every day, you earn every day. But in the village, you start digging from day one up to 4 months. Eh? Now, from day one, you don't have anything in your pocket. How will you survive in the village? It is very tricky. So you rather stay here than go back in the village.
34-year-old Alafat Odiambo, another hawker here, says he has lived on the job of hawking since he was a teenager. Speaking in a local dialect, Luganda, Odiambo says he would rather face the law than quit his job.
Well, we have been stopped from hawking, but we have to keep working illegally. I have to keep working by all means so I can make ends meet. I have to eat. If they catch me, they arrest me. If I manage to dodge them, then I can survive.
Odiambo says from hawking has been able to buy a plot of land and some cows. Activists have castigated the ban, saying it has come at the wrong time when citizens are recovering from the effects brought about by the COVID-19 pandemic. Chris Bajomunsi, Uganda government spokesman, defends the move to remove hawkers and vendors from the streets.
We have business people who rent buildings in Kampala, and they pay rent and the costs of other utilities. Now somebody buys his or her merchandise from other shops, including that very shop, and then he lays the merchandise in the front of the shop. Now the effect of that is that the would-be customers cannot easily access this shop.
There are more than 400,000 street vendors and hawkers in Kampala and surrounding areas, according to Kampala Hawkers Association. On several occasions, vendors have been banned from Kampala, only to resurface again. It remains to be seen if the ban will work out this time around. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
A new report by the Global Hunger Index says that nearly 25% of all Kenyans are undernourished, including more than 700,000 children. The study predicts that the international community will not be able to achieve the Agenda 2030 goal of ending hunger throughout the world within 8 years if countries continue at the current rate, given the fight against hunger is slowing down. Maureen Ojambo has more.
Kenya is ranked 87th out of the 116 countries that were included in the Global Hunger Index by the island-based group concerned worldwide and its German partner Welthungerhilfe. The index identifies Kenya as still suffering from a level of hunger that is still worrying. Speaking in Nairobi on Wednesday, Calvin Shingles, country director for Welthungerhilfe in Kenya, said Africa will experience the highest number of undernourished people between now and 2030.
Perhaps what is most troubling is that Africa is one world region predicted to experience an increase in the number of undernourished people between now and 2030. The Global Hunger Index, together with FAO, sees 24.8% of the Kenya population, this is a population of 50 million people, undernourished, meaning they did not consume sufficient calories to live a healthy and productive life.
In Kenya, conflict remains a primary driver of hunger. Shingle said violent conflict harms every aspect of food production.
As the progress towards zero hunger 2030 is slowing and in some cases reversing, this is driven by crises. And if we take a reflection on the Kenyan situation, we see the crises of drought. Think of conflict affecting Kenya adversely. But I think conflict is on the rise. We see more and more conflict within inter-clan We see more and more conflict between pastoralist communities seeking grazeland and water, and those cross-border conflicts are increasing day by day as well. So conflict is still part of the agenda for Kenya going forward.
Despite some rainfall in Kenya and improved vegetation, the situation is still dire with poor feeding conditions and the poor health of livestock. Nearly 1.5 million livestock deaths have been reported, with more than 10 counties in the country projected to experience severe drought. Henriette Geiger, ambassador of the European Union to Kenya, said the state of food security across the world is still worrying even before the COVID-19 pandemic.
The State of Food Security and Nutrition in the World 21 report emphasizes that undernourishment was on the rise even before the COVID-19 pandemic, which has only exacerbated food insecurity globally. In particular, attention has been drawn to poverty and inequality as underlying structural causes of food insecurity and malnutrition in all its forms.
Kenya's 2021 Global Hunger Index score indicates that the progress on reducing hunger and undernutrition has stalled. The trend does not reflect the impact of current crises, such as the drought being experienced in the arid and semi-arid counties, as well as the effects of climate change. Glade Mohammed, chief executive officer of the Frontier Counties Development Council, blames the government for neglecting the affected regions, mainly the northeastern parts of Kenya.
The level of malnutrition, poverty, and people who are suffering extreme poverty, you will find them mainly in the northern parts of this country. And that is not by accident. If you look at the level of investment in this country over the years since independence, you will realize that the regions that we come from and where you see a lot of these reports have been severely underserved.
The fight against hunger in Kenya is exacerbated by climate change, which is increasing food shortages and the number of undernourished people. Over 35% of all Kenyans suffer from food insecurity and malnutrition each year, with over 2.5 million people facing food insecurity. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
And for our final story this morning, voice-activated virtual assistant technologies such as Siri and Alexa are becoming increasingly common around the world. But in Africa, with its many languages, most people are at a digital disadvantage. To address the problem, some African researchers are creating translation tools to recognize and promote indigenous languages such as Yoruba. Timothy Obiezu has more from Abuja.
Yoruba language teacher Oluwafemi Awosonia resumes a day's classes with his students. He has been teaching the language for 10 years, but says he often struggles to migrate his class modules to an online student's blog site he created because there is no speech recognition technology for Yoruba.
Yoruba language is a language that has to do with signs. There comes with a lot of signs on the top, below, you know. I need to go extra mile. When typing my notes, I have to first type on Microsoft Word. And even when I type on Microsoft Word, it gives me this highlighting, like the words are not correct.
Awosania spends several hours manually editing and correcting his notes before uploading them to his blog. He says despite technological advances in Africa, languages like Yoruba, one of the most commonly spoken in Nigeria, remain neglected, affecting his students.
Limit knowledge. It limits the exhibition of knowledge. There are things you might wish you want to educate the student on. There are things you want to exhibit in the classes.
Language experts say it will take a long time before African languages are widely adopted in voice-driven technology. In the meantime, researchers like Tubosun and Awosanya will be working to adapt the Yoruba language for technology users. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
And that's it for this edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this morning with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voanews.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Just search for VOA Africa. Until next time, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a very good morning, Africa.